most of us do not engage in negative actions such as killing and stealing. Most of us do not. We don't do things like that. So therefore, simply by existing every single day and not doing those actions do not create any positive karma. Why is that? If by refraining from killing, we receive the result of not killing. Example, if we don't kill, we get a long life. We're reborn with a pleasant body, a pleasant appearance, appearance that attracts, an appearance that commands respect, an appearance that is pleasant in seeing. We'll get that kind of body. And that is subjective in every culture. Why? We'll reincarnate in whatever culture, we'll reincarnate in whatever body that would be pleasing to that culture, we're going to be there. It's not one stereotype. That's illogical. So therefore, if you're born on Mars and they have one eye and one ear, then you have one eye and one ear, you'd be beautiful there. Not here, but there. Similarly, if you go there, you'll be ugly. So my point is, from not killing, you'll have a strong body, a healthy body, a body that recovers, and a body that's attractive. Sijie chenpu sena with charisma. Very powerful to attract. Very powerful to see. When you walk down the street, walk anywhere, people have to stare at you and look at you. You'll have that type of body from not killing. That will be the result, a direct result. A very powerful result. So therefore, if you take the vow of not killing, every day that you don't kill, you will accumulate that type of result. Whereas if you simply don't kill and you don't take the vow, you don't have any type of result. There's no resignation there. There is no designation. There is no confirmation. None. You're simply refraining. Because if simply refraining from an action created positive karma, babies must create a lot of positive karma. Parents must create positive karma. They don't kill. Herbivorous animals must create positive karma because they don't kill. No. Simply refraining from an action doesn't mean you're collecting virtue. Why? Because the intention is not there. Intention, motivation, intention, action, completion. Those four causes must be there for an action to have result. Motivation, intention, action, and confirmation. You're happy you've done it. If these are not there, it doesn't constitute an action. Similarly, if these are not there, it doesn't constitute taking a vow or getting a result. At the same time, it doesn't constitute breaking a vow. Breaking a vow must have intent. Motivation, intent. Action and completion must be there to break a vow. So therefore, you think, oh, I want to kill a person. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to get them. I'm going to kill him. And then you plan. Then you go and kill him. You do it. You finish it. Oh, I'm very happy now. Then your vow is broken. If you're driving down the street and you were careless for a moment and you ran over someone and you killed them, I'm sorry to use example. You didn't break your vow. Intention, motivation, action, completion is not there. You don't break your vow. During Buddha's time, there was a fabulous nun who was a great practitioner, a great meditation master. And she attended Buddha's talk. She sat with the Sangha just like every other Sangha, ordained person. And she didn't reside in a monastery or a nunnery. She resided in a cave. And she went there for meditation. But unfortunately, a group of bandits went there, invaded her cave, and raped her. And so when she attended the teachings the next day after that, she was still able to attend. Some of the other monks told her she can't sit up there with them. And she said, why not? They said, you're disrobed because you've engaged in intercourse. So the Buddha intervened and asked her in front of the Sangha and the people there attended for teachings, did you intend that? She said, no. When they engaged in the action, were you happy your vows are broken? She said, no. And after, when it was finished, did you think in your mind, oh, I wish to do that again? She said, no. Then Buddha said, you didn't break your vow. You are a nun. Please remain seated and attend the talks. So the other monks get quiet. So what am I trying to say? Is to break a vow or to take a vow, motivation or intent, action, completion must be all there. If it is not there, it doesn't constitute breaking a vow. doesn't constitute. But that doesn't mean, oh, just because you're habitually inclined, so therefore you can keep on your habituations and never change yourself and never transform yourself at all, and you simply keep on doing what you've been doing before refuge, same after refuge. And that's not very good. So people are afraid of refuge or taking vows because they're afraid of challenging and pushing themselves to another level. They're very afraid of that. And what I want to tell people is, don't be afraid to challenge yourself. Don't be afraid to push yourself to another level. We all need an impetus. Sometimes we need a religious doctrine. Sometimes we need a teacher. Sometimes we come across a prayer. Sometimes we read another person's life story that's very inspiring. Sometimes it could be our very precious mothers. Sometimes it could be a school teacher that becomes an impetus for transforming ourselves. I'm not saying only by religious vows you can become a better person, no. But universally, religion is respected mostly, and religious vows are respected still in this world. Therefore, religious vows are more easier to associate with transformation. So therefore, if you don't have religious vows, it doesn't mean you cannot transform. Of course you can transform. Of course you can. But as I said, because religious vows are more associated with transformation, it's more easier to associate transformation with these vows. What are the vows for? The vows are a direct attack for our habituations. Our habituations are the causes of our imprisonment, are the causes of our suffering. All habituation. So therefore, what we need to learn first is, and this is in relation to vows, imputed objects are imputed. Imputation means something that doesn't exist on its own side. It exists from our side, but not from its own side. That is called imputation. An imputed phenomenon or an imputed object, for example, a horn on a rabbit is an imputed object. It does not exist. It does not exist at all. To say it exists, to draw it in pictures, and to make stories about it, and then scare children with it and say, oh, you know, if you're very naughty, this horned rabbit's going to come and poke you and hurt you and bite you. That fear from a child arises from an imputated phenomenon that does not exist on its own side. So when you explain to the child, hey, there's no such thing. There's this artist, and he was a very good, he had good imagination, and he just made that up, and someone else came along and made that story to scare kids, and you're a kid, you got scared, so you don't have to be scared anymore. There's no such thing. And then you show them encyclopedias of rabbits. There's not one rabbit with a horn. You take them to the zoo. There's a pet shop. There's no horn. So the fear of the child goes away. Why? He realizes that it's not real. Similarly, when we have a vision of someone, or we have an idea someone is greedy or selfish or not nice, it's an imputation. Why is it an imputation? If that person was inherently not nice from their side, they would have no friends. No one would like them at all. Every single person has a friend. Similarly, if we focus on this imputation, whether it is correct or not is not the point. What the point is, this is that we habituate ourselves to react with such a person in such a manner, again and again and again and again and again. This habituated action is our prison. Why? It will only become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Pretty much it will envelop people we love. Pretty much it will envelop people that we care about. Pretty much it will envelop everyone we come near. And that's the fear. Does anybody have any questions on that?